Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by Harris Cherokee Resort. Find us online at caesars.com/harris-cherokee.
Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
Okay, I realize that if I start the show by saying, man, things are a mess at Tennessee, I know I might run the risk of making you accidentally feel like you've clicked on an old episode of our program, that somehow you've kind of gone back to the archives without meaning to, that you've pulled something from last week or the week before or the week before that or the month before that or the year before that. I know we're in kind of a state of perpetual messiness when it comes to Tennessee, but given how bad the product is on the field, the latest stuff off the field, I think, turns this into something even uglier. And frankly, when Georgia goes to Neyland Stadium on Saturday, it's going to find itself a pretty significant soap opera there on the other side. As the water kind of rises here and critics seem to mount, I think it becomes more and more realistic to wonder, is Jeremy Pruitt the kind of coach that can fix what's wrong with the University of Tennessee? Let me give you some of the details of what has happened here over the course of the last 24 hours. It has come to light that Jeremy Banks, a Tennessee player, which was recently involved in a police stop based on a warrant for his arrest dating back to a traffic stop weeks before that, Banks got into a little bit of a, I don't even know what you call it, you know, a little bit of a war of words with the police there. But before that, just the whole confusion of the arrest, I guess somehow Banks calls Jeremy Pruitt. Pruitt, through speakerphone, ends up talking to the Knox County police there on the scene there with Banks, the player. And things, I think, from Jeremy Pruitt's perspective, go pretty badly from here. Now, I've kind of shortened this audio down a little bit. A lot of the local TV stations got a hold of the body cam footage that the police officer was wearing. And from that, you can hear Pruitt speaking through the body cam mic, whatever else. So I've taken kind of a long 5-minute phone call, and I've kind of whittled it down to about, I guess it's about 45 seconds or so. What you're going to hear on this, and the audio quality is actually, I think, pretty good. You should be able to hear this pretty clearly. You're going to hear Pruitt basically asking why the player here in this case, Banks, needs to be arrested, and basically kind of seeming to, in a kind of a passive way, argue with the police officer for why that the warrant for the arrest, why a warrant for arrest meant that Banks needed to be arrested here. And at the end, you can judge this for yourself. Sounds like Pruitt gets a little sarcastic here at the end. Overall, this is kind of a bad look for Pruitt. Let me let you hear a lot of the local TV stations in Knoxville have had this. Here is Jeremy Pruitt talking to the Knox County police officer.
Why do you have to arrest him just because he's got a warrant?
The state of Tennessee is the one who issued the warrant, so I have to take him in. But I have no choice about that. If it was just a suspended license, I can have discretion on that.
Does it say when the warrant was issued?
No, sir.
This is the silliest that I've seen in my life.
I got it.
I understand. I've worked at 4 places, and they never had no crap like this except for here. Because the people usually say, hey, something's not right here.
Well, like I said, sir, I don't know if they sent him notification. Usually they'll send notification if, or whatever, when you're supposed to appear in court on a ticket. If he does not appear in court, they will put a warrant for your arrest. So I don't know what ticket.
I get that.
Okay.
I understand that.
Okay.
Right? Some of these kids, they don't have nobody at home to teach them how to do stuff. And so if something happens, people notify so you can teach them how to do it. Anyhow, go ahead. Do your civic duty, man.
All right. Appreciate it, Coach.
I mean, you can judge for yourself here, and obviously I'm not necessarily an objective observer of this situation. A lot of my audience obviously likes the fact that Tennessee is in a little bit of hot water here. We'll grant that off the top here, but when Pruitt at the end of that statement says, go ahead and do your civic duty, man, I think a lot of people are going to take that as sarcasm from Pruitt in the direction of the police officer. Now, let me try to be fair here for a moment. I don't think there's a one of us, myself included, who hasn't tried to get out of a traffic citation before. I don't mean anytime you've been pulled over. I mean, you know, certainly it's pretty common. I know I've done this. I've spoken to the police officer and said, isn't there something we could do here? Isn't there some way we can make this a warning and not have to make this a in this case, it's an arrest. But, you know, in our case, it might be trying to get out of a speeding ticket or something like that. I mean, I don't think it's the most egregious behavior of all time for Pruitt to speak on behalf of his player and say, hey, do we have to, like, take him downtown for this? Isn't there something else we can do? So I'm not that upset with Pruitt about that. However, I do think this entire issue overall just kind of speaks to organizational management of a program. Because the one thing, and I said this when we came into the studio this morning, our buddy Connor Riley, one of our producers, he agreed with me on this. Why is Pruitt the one on the phone here? I mean, Pruitt is the leader of this organization. This is a nine-figure, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars in value in entity Tennessee football is. Does Jeremy Pruitt not have someone below him who can kind of act as, for lack of a better phrase, if you've seen a movie, you know what I'm talking about here? Does Pruitt not have someone who can act as the fixer in this role? Like, where's his Michael Clayton? What was the Showtime show from a couple years ago? What was that thing called? You know, where's your fixer here? Where's the guy that kind of steps in here and kind of helps you out with this? Like I said before, I don't think it's that egregious to try to get out of the player arrest, but I think it speaks to a mismanaged organization that Pruitt's the guy on the phone and that Pruitt's talking to this police officer, seemingly unaware of the fact that because of body cam footage and freedom of information requests and things like that, basically everything he says is going to end up getting, basically broadcast all over the state of Tennessee, and then after that, all over the country after that. I think this speaks to Pruitt kind of mismanaging a situation from a PR standpoint and just an organizational standpoint. I kind of agree with the idea that, hey, you know, listen, I'm not the most organized guy in the world either. When I was younger, especially, if I got a ticket, maybe I wouldn't have handled that properly. Maybe I do need someone to help me. But the idea that it's Pruitt on the phone here pleading the case, I think kind of speaks to kind of a messy situation here. And when you're not winning games on the field and you're also kind of pleading your case with the Knox County police in a situation like this, I just think it ends up making Pruitt look even worse. But to make matters worse than that, if I've got the timeline correct here, so this conversation with Pruitt and the police officer goes down. Police officer says, sorry, there's nothing I can do. And then you get Banks into the police car after that. And then things get even worse because this is where TMZ, the gossip website, comes into a play because they get a hold of the video of Banks talking to the police in the police car. And frankly, this entire video is like 5 minutes long. We do kind of a family-themed show around here. We don't have a lot of bad language and stuff like that in what we do. I can't play most of what Banks says in this video because it's just extraordinarily profane. But the worst thing that he said here, and the thing that makes him look terrible, I think Tennessee by connection look pretty bad too, is when Banks suggests to a female intern, on kind of a ride along situation, that he's from Memphis and they shoot cops in Memphis. This is ugly. This is Jeremy Banks, the player in the middle of this traffic stop from before, as captured by TMZ. Take a listen to this.
Really? Like I said, I'm trying to work with you, and you're doing this?
Work with me, also. Yeah, I'm just going to talk. That's just what I do.
You're disrespecting me and all that?
No, I ain't disrespecting you at all. I've been dealing with police all my life.
Okay.
So I ain't
worried. Done anything to you or anything like that?
No, I just, it's okay. just my, how I do it. Ma'am, I don't think you want to be an intern, because where I'm from, we shoot at cops. I'm from Memphis, Tennessee.
So I think that's disgusting, and I think that's well beyond the pale of what's acceptable, and there's really no excuse for that whatsoever. Now, Tennessee has tried to backtrack on this. They've issued a statement in Banks' name where he apologizes for his actions, but frankly, it's hard to reconcile the words that Banks is using in the Tennessee statement with what he used in that statement there. And this goes beyond being a Georgia fan or Tennessee fan or a fan of any school in the SEC. Surely all reasonable people can agree that what Banks says there is nasty and reprehensible, and he ought to be dealt with harshly, I believe. I think that's the job of Tennessee football here. But even beyond that, to kind of bring it back to the realm of football here for a moment, admittedly, Georgia fans do have a little bit of a good time knowing that Tennessee is such a mess right now, and the actions of Pruitt here, the actions of one of his players, kind of make that even worse. What kind of soap opera is Georgia going to find itself in and a part of on the other sideline when it goes to Knoxville on Saturday? Hard to say right now, but boy, the Tennessee program continues to seem to fall lower and lower with each passing week, and this week is seemingly another example of that. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented today by Harris Cherokee Casino Resort. Great to have you with us, no matter how you get to us today, live on video, 10 a.m., Dog Nation Facebook, YouTube, Twitter. We're on the radio at noon as well on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref, and we're available as a podcast wherever you find them, including the world-famous DogNation.com. Just really glad to have you as a part of our program today, and really excited to tell you about Harris Cherokee Casino Resort as well. Now, you know a lot of the things that Harris Cherokee's been doing for kind of a long time here. Obviously, it's close to Atlanta. Both of their resort properties are really less than 3 hours from the Atlanta area, so it's easy to get to. I'm talking about the Harris Cherokee Valley River, which is an unbelievable place, the Harris Cherokee Casino Resort, the beautiful resort that is, all the nice restaurants on hand, the gaming and everything else. But here's something else I want you to know about there as well. The coming soon, and this is going to be really exciting, The Book is going to open up. Now, The Book is a brand new sports betting facility. That's right, sports betting is coming to Harris Cherokee Casino Resort and Harris Cherokee Valley River Resort. That is on its way. The Book's going to be open in early 2020. It's going to be the ultimate setting for you to watch games and get bets down on games and really just have a great time, as that is going to be ushered into the Harris properties there in Harris Cherokee Casino Resort. Happy to welcome in sports betting. Let me give you the website to go to so you can find out more information about this and plan your travel. It's Caesars.com/Harris-Cherokee/casino/the-book. I know that's kind of a mouthful. If you're watching on video, you can obviously see that. I'll read it for you one more time. Caesars.com/Harris-Cherokee-casino/the-book. So you can check that out. Find out more about The Book at Harris Cherokee Casino Resort. It's going to be an amazing, amazing 2020 around there. Really exciting stuff. All right, we're going to get Mike Griffith here coming up in just a moment. Before that, though, let's go around the doghouse. Here today, brought to you by our friends at Engineered Solutions of Georgia. I want to turn our attention back fully to the Georgia Bulldogs here for a moment. Georgia week off, rolling into a three-game stretch in the month of October. Dogs will be a heavy favorite in all three of these, but that doesn't mean there aren't things we can learn about Georgia as it moves through the month of October, heading towards a November, which will obviously be a reckoning one way or another for Georgia's national championship hopes. Kirby Smart actually spoke on that topic a bit yesterday, including after seeing his team play for four games and practice now for weeks upon weeks. What does he know about his team now that he didn't know before the start of the season? Smart addressed that yesterday. Here's what he had to say.
Our days that haven't been great at practice, they've responded well to. And that's usually the first sign that they're the right kind of guys. And then adversity strikes, and they respond to that. I mean, you know, we're not easy on them out there. We're tough on them, and they embrace it. And the older guys kind of lead with a message of, you know, they're pushing you because they want you to be great. And that's usually the sign of a good team that can handle, number one, adversity, but number two, tough coaching.
I think a lot of Georgia fans, and it's interesting to hear Smart there at the end talk about the idea of tough coaching. I think a lot of Georgia fans, though, would say that given the first third of the regular season, maybe they're not quite sure what they see from their favorite team as of yet. But I think Smart's opinion matters here maybe more than anything else. The fact that Smart, in that statement, seems pretty confident, not just based on what he's seen from four games, which at times can be a little misleading. That's a small sample size. The practice routine, though, over the course of months, dating back to the end of July, that's a lot larger sample size and a lot more to go on. And Kirby, based on that, seems to be pretty confident right now, and that, to me, matters. Now, he also said something about moving forward. With Tennessee this week and South Carolina and Kentucky looming, what can we learn about Georgia going forward? Smart also addressed that a bit yesterday as well.
We'll see us continue to improve. I mean, there's a lot of teams that will hit game 5, 6, 7, and they plateau. And the teams that are best continue to get better. And I don't know what this team's going to do game 5, 6, 7. We got to see. But I want to see them continue to grow and improve.
So certainly October for Georgia doesn't loom as exciting as what the month of November probably provides, with trips to Auburn, the game against Florida, which we obviously hype up a lot around here, and then the ultimate decision of just what Georgia's regular season record is going to look like. November, in a lot of ways, seems more interesting, but October could end up being more important as Georgia does work to improve and get better. Based on what it's seen through four games, what can it add to that in game 5, game 6, game 7? I actually think that's a pretty interesting thing to discuss and pay attention to as you move forward through the month. We also talked yesterday about defense a lot. The fact that I think it's kind of flown under the radar, how stingy the Georgia defense has been thus far this season. Smart addressed that some yesterday as well.
you're always trying to get better on defense. We're trying to create ways to make negative plays, have new wrinkles, allow the guys to play fast, play more players. We're trying to improve on our tackling. You know, it's not something that we've been satisfied with. We get out of position and reach a lot of times, and we're not forcing the number of turnovers that we need to force in order to be a top defense. So there's a lot of things we're really looking to improve on defensively. And hey, our guys are pushing each day out there. They're trying to get better, and they push each other.
So listen, Tennessee's got a lot of problems right now, but those are their problems. Georgia is on a quest to get better each and every week. That includes this Saturday in Knoxville, showing improvement and working on some of the things that the program's going to need most when it plays the games that matter most yet to come. I think it makes these next 3 weeks' worth of games pretty interesting, and I can't wait to watch them all along with you. It's Around the Doghouse. It's brought to you today by our friends at Engineered Solutions of Georgia. And my favorite thing about ESOG is they are a solutions-based company. That means when there's simple fixes to the problems you might be facing with your water maybe creeping into your basement or some sort of foundation issue, they'll give you the simple explanation of how to fix it. But obviously, sometimes when it comes to the structural integrity of your home or waterproofing issues in your basement or your crawl space, those problems can be more difficult to fix. And that, if that's the issue, well, you want to know that you've got smart people on the case, and Engineered Solutions of Georgia is certainly that, because they have two full-time engineers on staff. That's really big. When you're talking about something that, about, you know, how your house stands up and staying straight and doesn't, you know, the foundation doesn't start sagging, you want engineers doing that. You want well-trained, smart people on that. That's what Engineered Solutions of Georgia provides. So make sure you give my friends over there at Engineered Solutions of Georgia a call. Dial 678-ESOG now. Dial 678-ESOG now, and that'll get you in touch with Engineered Solutions of George. All right, good to have you with us here today. It's Dog Nation Daily, presented by Harris Cherokee Casino Resort. We'll have more on Georgia-Tennessee later on, including what's being said on the Tennessee side of this. But for now, let's check in with more of what's happened this week in Athens, Georgia. Let's talk to our buddy Mike Griffith.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
Georgia getting ready for Tennessee on Saturday. We're obviously fascinated by that around here from the Georgia side of things, and yet you can't ignore the fact that Tennessee's scuffling on the field, seemingly having a lot of problems off the field there as well. With more on that, let's talk to Mike Griffith here, who's obviously been there for us on the ground in Athens for the last couple of days. But, Mike, you also know the scene there in Knoxville pretty well. How much of a problem is it for Jeremy Pruitt? I'm sure you've seen the video of him, you know, pleading on behalf of Jeremy Banks with the police officer. Banks' ugly statements in the back of the police car is captured by TMZ. For a coach that's pretty embattled because of his team's play on the field, how much does the latest soap opera stuff off the field hurt Pruitt Knoxville, you think?
Yeah, it's damaging. And you know, really, B.A., my takeaway is just sad. You know, it's funny, right before you called, I went back to a video I did in Jeremy Banks' home 2 years ago when he was a high school kid and a recruit. And, you know, I'm watching that video and I'm thinking, this isn't the same kid that I talked to 2 years ago. What's happened in that culture up there? One. Two, you know, with 100 assistants running around up there, how does a kid have a warrant out for his arrest? And there, you know, there's people there that take care of these guys' schedules. They're, you know, but to your point, from a PR standpoint, I mean, it's a complete fail. I mean, you know, contrast that to the way Georgia handled the Dwan Mathis crisis, compared to how Tennessee handled a kid who somehow had a warrant out for his arrest for failure to appear in court, you know, that behaved that way towards authority. And again, I just interviewed the kid 2 years ago, and it was yes sir, no sir to everything. It's just kind of like, you know, yeah, what's going on, man?
Well, I'll be really candid with you just for a second. You know, when Georgia first hired Kirby Smart, and you can go back and find this, I've written about this at DogNation.com after the fact, you know, I really argued for, hey, maybe Georgia wants to be careful here. Maybe Georgia wants to hire a coach with previous head coaching experience. That opinion seems ludicrous now because of what we've learned about Kirby Smart since then. But at the time, you know, I was aware that not every one of these assistant coaches who's, you know, learned at the feet of Nick Saban, who seems like the next sure thing, they don't all work out the way they're supposed to. And maybe Pruitt here now stands as an example of that, that what Smart has done at Georgia, you know, kind of scuffling on the field a little bit in 2016, winning the SEC in 2017, from a certain vantage point, it seems just destined to always be because he had been successful as a defensive coordinator at Alabama before that. But there's an element of what Smart has built at UGA that is not nearly as easy as he has made it look, and the way that Pruitt's fallen on his face on the field and can't seem to, stay out of trouble off the field, at least his program can't seem to stay out of trouble off the field. You know, I think Pruitt's an example of that, that not every one of these hotshot assistants is a surefire sure thing when they become a head coach, and that Georgia's actually pretty lucky that Smart acclimated to the leadership role as quickly as he did, because once you're the guy in charge of a program, man, Mike, as you know, things really change and they get a lot more difficult. Smart has made it look easy. I think Pruitt's showing us how difficult it can actually be.
Yeah, I mean, I give a lot of credit to Kirby Smart, BA, but it also is why you got to be careful what program you pick. I mean, let's just say this. You know, and I've said it before, and I've told you guys this. I mean, Georgia's had a classy program for a long time. I mean, there's a culture in Athens and around the University of Georgia that, you know, that's special. I mean, it's a top 15 academic institution. It's an incredible college town. You know, the Georgia graduates and the respect they have for the school. You know, the culture that Mark Richt built. I mean, there was some carryover there. And Kirby, as you said, he is taking, you know, the next step, which is really hard to do. I mean, it's really hard to improve on winning 10 games a year. You know, and this guy's winning 12 games a year and telling us it's not good enough. So, and also the administration. I really believe there's a trickle down, you know, whether it's president, whether it's AD, whether it's administrators, you know, the gatekeepers to the university. You know, because football coaches, when you think about it, they're kind of caretakers. I mean, you know, Kirby's not going to be here forever. I mean, he might be here another 20 years, but then it's going to be somebody else. But the thing that will always be there will be the University of Georgia and the culture and the graduates and the way that they treat that university and keep it up. And so I think it's even bigger than just a coach. I think it has to do with the culture. And I think University of Georgia's got a pretty special one.
Yeah, it's certainly interesting to think about. And as far as the game goes on Saturday, you know, I've kind of talked a lot this week, Mike, and, you know, my perspective on all this stuff is going to be colored by the experiences I've had following this team as a fan for a long time, and now I guess kind of covering this team to a certain extent for kind of a while there as well. And for someone who's about my age, Georgia Tennessee, I think, has in the past really felt like a rivalry, and I'm of the belief that from the UGA fan side of things, it still should feel like a rivalry even though Tennessee is down. You know, what do you think Tennessee fans think about this? Because obviously right now they're just hungry for a win against anyone. But, you know, I can go back to the 90s when Tennessee was dominating the series. And, I mean, Georgia was really desperate for a win against the Vols. And when they finally started getting some, Hobnail Boot game in 2001, the day that Georgia fans stormed the field in 2000, even the 02, 03, 04 game, or actually Georgia lost in 04, but 02, 03 game's an example of this. You know, it was a really special thing for Georgia to beat Tennessee. Do you think Georgia-Tennessee is still a rivalry?
I do. You know, and Georgia was the roadblock, you know, from Tennessee taking over the East. I mean, I was covering Tennessee then, and everybody thought once Spurrier left, once Fulmer beat him at the Swamp in 2001 as a 17-point dog, and Spurrier quits, we're all thinking, okay, it's Tennessee's time. And, you know, David Pollack and David Green and Mark Richt threw up a big roadblock. And, you know, Casey Clawson could beat Alabama and he could beat Florida, but he couldn't beat Georgia. So, you know, it is a rivalry. You know, for the younger players, you know, I was asked this question yesterday in a Tennessee show. It's kind of like, where Georgia's at right now, though, they don't play up the rivalries. They just play to their standard. I mean, I really think from the player standpoint, the only game that I think really gets them foaming at the mouth, like personal blood, is Alabama. Other than that, I mean, they're like on a business trip. But as far as how Tennessee fans feel, you know, Tennessee coaches have always been judged on what they do against Alabama, Georgia, and Florida. And that won't change. I mean, that's the standards that's there right now. That's what Philip Fulmer believes. Jeremy Pruitt addressed that when he was hired. So, yeah, right now, I mean, what do they think about it? They think they might want to go play a round of golf on Saturday. They think they may you know, want to go to the beach, because I think they're all expecting Georgia to win this game handily.
Yeah, I think you bring up a pretty good point on the Georgia side of this. You know, seemingly before the game, Georgia's never emphasized rivalries less. Now, There's some behavior in terms of the celebration after the game, especially if you want to go back and look at the video from the Florida game last year, maybe some of the late game stuff against Auburn last year, where Georgia certainly seems to enjoy winning some of these rivalry games, even if they don't talk them up too much before the game. But I, for the most part, agree with you that Georgia doesn't seem to, anyway, use rivalries as a motivation pregame as much as maybe some programs do now, or maybe Georgia would have maybe so much in the past. But from the fan standpoint on this, Mike, to the extent that I have any influence whatsoever, my message to fans this week would be, hey, appreciate this for what it is, a moment in time, an era in the history of Georgia football and the history of Tennessee football, assuming that Georgia does what it's supposed to do on Saturday, where Georgia's in full, firm control of, you want to call it a series, you want to call it a rivalry, you can call it whatever you want to, but it wasn't always this way. It is right now. Who knows how long it lasts? But even though Tennessee's a bad football team right now, if Georgia goes into Neyland Stadium on Saturday and earns a significant win, boy, I hope Georgia fans take a moment to appreciate that, even if the team itself is on to the next one. I hope fans will pause for a moment and reflect on just how fun and special that is in comparison to what a lot of people my age have kind of lived through.
No doubt about it. You know, and David Pollack said it a couple of weeks ago that, you know, these are the good old days. And you know, what Georgia's doing right now is special. I mean, you got to go back to the Herschel Walker era, you know, to find a time when Georgia football was this dominant year in and year out. And, you know, what Kirby Smart's built, the vision of the leaders, the facilities that are being built up as Georgia grows even stronger. I mean, this is a really exciting time to be a Georgia football fan. And it's a really exciting time for me to cover Georgia football. I enjoy going over to that football building every day and hearing what Kirby Smart has to say and hearing how the players handle themselves and the focus that I hear and the team first. I mean, you know, that's a beautiful thing. You know, I'll be honest, a quick sidebar, you know, with all this stuff about players being paid for likenesses and everything, I think it's going to be really hard to sell kids on a team first attitude when money's at stake. So, you know, but getting back onto your topic, there's no doubt that if you're a Georgia fan, this would be a good time to go up to Knoxville and enjoy a game at Neyland Stadium. You know, enjoy their town. They've got a nice something called Market Square downtown. It's about 1/8 the size of what downtown Athens has, but it's the same sort of setup with music and restaurants and things like that. So the weather looks like it's going to be lovely. So you know, if you're a Georgia fan, to me, this is a good time to take a road trip to Knoxville and enjoy.
On the field, Mike, what do you want to see from Georgia on Saturday, or what do you think Georgia needs to show? I played a little bit of audio before you joined us. A lot of talk yesterday about improvement, you know, getting better through the bye week, getting better through the month of October. Kirby didn't say this, but it's obviously three opponents will be pretty significant underdogs. What do you want to see from Georgia as a sign that it is improving and it is getting better?
Well, number one, you know, you want to see Jake Fromm come out of there healthy. You know, because, you know, Pruitt's going to blitz. You know, he's going to try and get to the quarterback. You want Jake to get out of there without a limp or without a wrist or without a shoulder. So that's the first thing, is you probably want to see a pretty dominant first half and see Jake Fromm get the heck out of the ball game with a big enough lead. But early on, you want to see Jake continue to build that chemistry with Pickens and Blaylock and Demetrius Robertson and Lawrence Cager and Eli Wolf, the playmakers. You know, because it's no secret. Notre Dame said it, and I'll give Brian Kelly credit. You know, he came right out and said, if you let Georgia run, you don't have a chance. I mean, it's that simple. You have to load the box. You have to stop the run. You absolutely have to stop the run. And so now it's Georgia's move. Can Georgia make you pay? Can Jake get that isolation outside and throw that fade or throw that post? Can Lawrence Cager separate? Can George Pickens make somebody miss? Can Demetrius Robertson beat press coverage? Can Dominic Blaylock continue to evolve into this really successful and versatile receiver? You know, is Tyler Simmons, you know, going to be healthy enough to catch punts? Will they have somebody else back there? Will Eli Wolf be utilized like Isaac Nauta was? He's actually a 4-5 guy, and Nauta was a 4-8 guy. Those are the things I want to see. How do they break down the carries in the backfield? Does Amir White get more involved? Does Kenny McIntosh break another run? You know, that's the fun thing about covering Georgia football, is when Connor Riley and I do all those stories each week, BA, and we're up there talking to those guys, everywhere you turn, there's a playmaker and another successful story.
Yeah, that's certainly true, and there's been plenty of that for Georgia thus far, and obviously Dog fans hope it continues. Let me do kind of one more thing before we let you go, kind of in the same vein of what we're discussing. One of my themes here this week is, while there's still a lot Georgia fans want to see from on both sides of the ball. You touched on some of that. Defensively, a lot of that seems to center around being a little bit more impactful in the backfield. You know, all the havoc talk, sacks, tackles for loss, things like that. The one thing I think quietly Georgia's been pretty good at this year, when you look at the teams that it's played, you know, Vanderbilt scored points against LSU. Notre Dame's a top 10 team, even if not quite the most dynamic offense in the country. Arkansas State has essentially scored against everybody but Georgia here this season. I think the stinginess of Georgia's defense right now is actually kind of a neat thing, kind of a cool thing, and kind of flies below the radar. I'm not saying that Georgia doesn't need to improve in that area too, but there are some areas in which Georgia's probably already doing pretty well, which may not get as much attention because, let's face it, there are some things that dog fans still want to see a little bit more of.
Well, and to your point, I mean, last year the College Football Playoff Committee, all they talked about was how good Oklahoma's offense was, and they didn't pay attention that Oklahoma's defense was ranked outside the top 100. And there was Georgia with the top 13 offense and defense. So to your point, I don't think it's just UBA. I think it's fans and even the people that are supposed to be experts that ignore defensive accomplishment. But Kirby Smart doesn't. And that's one of the reasons why Georgia's got a good chance to beat LSU or Alabama, because they can play on both sides of the ball. And you talk about good stories. And, you know, guys that aren't necessarily household names are emerging. I thought Tate Crowder's performance, 9 tackles. I talked to an NFL scout. And, you know, he came over to me. He said, "Boy, that really surprised me." I said, "Well, you know what? It surprised me, too. Because 2 weeks ago, I thought Tay was a step slow, but it's like the light went on. And when I interviewed Tay this week, he said, yeah, I just put in a lot of work and focused on the little things. And when the little things happen, the big things happen." So, you know, can Tay Crowder continue to emerge? I mean, 6'3", 235, if he plays like that, B.A., he'll be in the league. You know, Monty Rice is a guy we know that Kirby's invested in. He wasn't first team, second team, or third team preseason All-SEC. In fact, I think J.R. Reed's about the only guy that got any love. So, you know, to your point, it's not celebrated. They don't get talked about a lot. The defensive line, Kirby said, you know, hey, we don't have one dominant guy, but they got waves. They got 2 or 3 waves of units they can throw at you, and they're all pretty good, starting with Jordan Davis. And you know, so we're seeing some good things up front. We're seeing some good things in the linebacking core. They got some weapons out there now. Nolan Smith is certainly exciting, and Azeez Ojulari and Jermaine Johnson. I mean, you know, I think they're future NFL players right there. And then I think the corners are good. You know, Eric Stokes is pretty sticky, and I thought Tyson Campbell was playing lights out when he got hurt. And DJ Daniels steps up. Like I said, I could go on and on, but that's what happens on championship teams. Guys emerge, and that's what's exciting. You think about this, B.A., I'll leave you with this. Last year at this time, we didn't even really know much about Jordan Davis. He really didn't emerge until the second half of the season. And I wonder if there's guys like that on the roster right now that we're going to be talking about another month.
Very interesting point to leave us with, Mike. We appreciate your time here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Harris Cherokee Casino Resort. Look forward to reading a bunch from you at DogNation.com. Leading into the big one with the Vols on Saturday there in Knoxville. Mike, thanks so much for your time.
Yes, sir. Thanks, Bill.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Really good stuff from Mike Griffith heading to the game with Tennessee on Saturday, and he's right. You know, this is around that time a year ago where some guys did emerge. Now, a little bit different for Georgia right now in that if you want to go back and look at the Notre Dame game from 2 weeks ago, third down in particular, I know I wrote about this in the forum, forum.dognation.com during the game. Georgia's got a lot of young guys in on those third down plays. N'Kobe Dean's on the field a lot. Trayvon Walker was in on third down a bunch. Nolan and Jermaine's not a true freshman. He's a junior college transfer, but nonetheless, he's a newcomer. So Georgia's already using a lot of newcomers, especially on third down, but there's still plenty of time for maybe more to emerge and for other guys to kind of round into form here. What Georgia is as a program overall, as a team overall, on both sides of the ball, the month of October will go a long way towards telling us what it will truly take into battle when it takes on the Floridas and the Auburns and the games that really matter in November. This is an important proving ground to get ready for the next month, the games that matter most. By the way, we'll have more on that coming up in a moment. Before that, though, here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Harris Cherokee Casino Resort, let me also tell you about my friends at the UGA Alumni Association for a moment. And one of the things I love about UGA alumni that give back to their school is that they're really paving the way for the next generation of UGA grads to have a great college experience and then do great things for their world once they're out of school and then provide their own opportunity for that next generation as well, and the cycle repeats itself over and over again. I told you about this stat yesterday. 96% of Georgia undergraduate students are employed or pursuing advanced degrees within 6 months of graduation. That's a success story. And it's the experiences that they get while at UGA that sets them up for success, including the experiential learning activity that students go through while they're at UGA. And when you give to Georgia, you provide more enhanced opportunities and just more additional opportunities for students to have these kinds of experiences that, you know, give them a kind of hands-on, real-world life training that prepares them for success. But it takes the involvement of people who still care about the university to make all that happen. So let me give you a website to go to so you can support the school that was supportive to you, and you can provide an opportunity for the next generation of UGA student that you were able to enjoy while you were on campus. It's give.uga.edu. Once again, the website, give.uga.edu. And, of course, really proud to have the UGA Alumni Association and all of you who support that as a part of us here on Dog Nation Daily as well. Let's do our SEC through now. And let me talk to you for a moment about Auburn and Florida, two teams that admittedly we don't like a ton around here, especially the Gators. We are the chief Gator haters. And I have been saying for virtually the entire calendar year, going back to really after the Peach Bowl win that Florida had against Michigan, that once Florida got into the meat of its schedule, you know, Miami first-year coach, Tennessee, kind of a shaky program right now, teams like Towson, obviously, you know, no test whatsoever. We're going to really learn something about Florida once it gets into those games that matter. The two games against the SEC West, they got Auburn at home, they'll travel to LSU soon. They've obviously got Georgia looming, and my tune hasn't changed on that at all. I believe this is the moment in time where Florida starts to sort of see its reckoning. I think the Auburn defense is simply too good for a Florida offensive line that's still struggling a bit. And while Kyle Trask has certainly not been worse than Felipe Franks was, this is still a Florida running game, I think, that's struggling to get going just a bit. And Auburn's not the kind of opponent you want to see on that. However, there's also an element of, boy, Auburn's really gotten lots of pats in the back, really gotten a lot of love after, you know, beating up on Mississippi State, winning at Texas A&M, still getting a little bit of steam from that neutral site win against Oregon. So sometimes traveling on the road after everybody's been telling you for a week how great you are coming off a dominant win against Mississippi State, sometimes that's not the easiest recipe. Still think they have enough here in this game. I saw an interesting stat, and I think I'm right about this, that Auburn all time in top 10 matchups on the road, 7-3. When they've been ranked in the top 10, when their opponent's been ranked in the top 10, they played on the road. Auburn's 7-3 in those games, which seems like a pretty impressive stat, maybe a bit of an oddity, but it kind of lines up with what we know. Auburn's either not good, but when they are good, they're pretty dangerous. 9-win Gus Malzahn teams having a history of beating Nick Saban, for instance. This is an example of, like we see about every other year, Auburn better than they're supposed to be, and I think they ride that here in Gainesville as well. It's also an interesting showdown for Dan Mullen in this game, too. Because the one thing we always heard about Mullen is doing more with less when it comes to Mississippi State. Keeping it closer than the Vegas experts would have expected in a lot of cases. In some cases, pulling outright upsets. But not beating a lot of top 10 teams. We always say, well, it's Mississippi State. He's got less talent. Well, Florida's not supposed to have less talent than Auburn. This is a chance for Dan Mullen to finally get what the Mississippi State talent and depth pool would have never provided, a chance to go out and get a big top 10 win in an SEC play. Can Mullen earn that on Saturday? I'd say no. I think it's a fascinating game, though. Let me do a couple other quick stories here for a moment. I saw a bunch of rumors online this morning that, you know, Rutgers recently fired its coach and looking for another one. And I guess one of the names that's emerged, it's maybe a little bit of a pipe dream, but the fact that it's even being mentioned shows you how bad things have gotten in Starkville. That Joe Moorhead, who's got obviously ties to the Northeast, he was at Penn State as offensive coordinator before he came to Starkville, that he might be on Rutgers' radar. If that's true, what that leads you to believe is he may not be on Mississippi State's radar much longer. This Mississippi State program is bad. The team is bad. And, you know, we'll get plenty wrong. This is when we kind of got right. We never really felt like that Moorhead was going to be the best fit there in Starkville. And as some of that really elite talent that Mullen, to his credit, had recruited near the end of his tenure, once that started cycling through and going to the NFL, things are going to be back to normal for Mississippi State, and they have crashed, landed hard back into what normal for that program was before. And then really, really quickly here, this is not SEC related, but I did want to mention this. So the story of the weekend was the fact that North Carolina played Clemson closer than any of us would have imagined. However, the aftermath of the game, I guess they're inside Keenan Stadium in Chapel Hill, they were showing Clemson fans on the video boards, and they were putting like funny, sarcastic messages underneath, basically mocking some Clemson fans for being bandwagon fans. And apparently Clemson fans got their feelings hurt about this, so much so that Bubba Cunningham, the UNC athletic director, has apologized to the Clemson University president. I think you'll join me in saying that this is the most ACC story of all time. The fact that we have formal apologies for video board messages, I mean, this is the kind of thing that just doesn't happen in the SEC. And it's one of the reasons why, even though Clemson's built an elite team and an elite program, it's going to kind of be hard to ever fully take them seriously when their fans get that upset at something as innocuous as this. But nonetheless, we'll make that your SEC through. And I want to let you hear some audio in just a moment from a Tennessee player who has addressed more about what Jim Chaney's impact might be on the game on Saturday. We will do that coming up. First, though, a quick reminder about our friends at Kroger. Really good savings and great stuff going on right now at Kroger I want you to know about. When you're getting ready for a tailgate party, whether it be Friday, Saturday, Sundays, whichever brand of football you're into this upcoming weekend, you can get big stuff at your local Kroger to get ready for that, including buy one, get one of equal or lesser value on pork bag ribs. Also, Doritos, just $1.99 per bag when you buy two. So big savings there on that. Hope you'll check it, take care of that, and check that out there at your local Kroger. Now, hot topic all week long has been Jim Chaney, former UGA offensive coordinator, now at Tennessee. Tennessee offense not doing very well, but does Chaney have the nuclear launch codes of Georgia? Does he have the defensive secrets after playing against those guys in practice the last couple of years? Well, one guy who thinks maybe so is Tennessee offensive lineman Brandon Kennedy. Here is what he said about that when asked this week.
He's had a lot of impact, and, you know, him being from Georgia, you know, he's able to, like, kind of tell us about, you know, what the players and, you know, the staff and how they are. So he's been excellent.
How helpful has that been this week, if at all?
It's been very helpful, you know, just knowing, like, the game plan and what they're going to do, because, I mean, he's practiced against them for however long he's been there. So it's been a great tool.
I told you yesterday, I don't believe this at all. Both Jeremy Pruitt and Kirby Smart this week have downplayed Chaney's impact on this game, and sometimes that kind of stuff can sound like coach speak. In this case, though, I do think it's probably true. Coaches just know each other's tendencies, and it's very hard to do anything that truly sneaks up on someone else. Ultimately, college football games are not won by coaching decisions as much as the media wants to make them sound like anyway. I believe for the most part, games are won by the talent on the field. It's why Georgia's such a big favorite on Saturday. It's why not that many UGA fans are sweating this game. Now, they still want to see some improvement. They still want to see their team getting better. But the idea that somehow Chaney's got some sort of secret that overcomes the significant, prodigious talent advantage that Georgia enjoys in this game, I don't think most Dog fans are buying that for a moment. But interesting to hear Kennedy kind of saying otherwise there. So we'll keep watching this and kind of see where that goes. Let me also do something else here real quick before we get ready to wrap up our program on a serious note. I guess prayers out to Roquan Smith, obviously the great former Georgia linebacker with the Chicago Bears. Admittedly, I don't fully understand this situation. I don't know that anyone does now. There's been some reporting out of the local Chicago media. ESPN's also picked up on this too, that Smith did not play this past Sunday, and kind of dealing with what's been called a personal issue here. Matt Nagy is the Bears coach. I'm going to show you a quote from Nagy as captured by ESPN on the subject of Roquan Smith, that it's a completely a personal issue, Nagy says. I'm not going to answer any more about it. That's where it's right now. I understand where all of you are coming from, but out of respect to this right now, I just want to leave it at that. That's Bears coach Matt Nagy talking about what kept Roquan Smith off the field for the Bears this past Sunday and what puts his status in doubt, I guess, for at least this game going forward. I believe the Bears in London on Sunday. So this is kind of an odd situation. Obviously, we'll respect his privacy on this, but prayers to him for whatever personal issue he's dealing with. It's rectified here soon. One more thing I also want to do. You know, we mentioned this yesterday with our buddy John Stinchcomb. John and his brother Matt doing a great job raising money for our friends at Children's Healthcare as Children's Healthcare battles childhood cancer. And this is a great way to not just only show your support for UGA, but support a great cause there as well. So I want to make sure you're aware of this website. It's touchdownforchildrens.org/team/university-of-Georgia. Touchdownsforchildren.org. And then the University of Georgia tab, when you get there on that, will get you in there and give you a chance to both show just how benevolent UGA fans can be and also really raise money for a great cause. I thought John said this so well yesterday. It's the kind of thing you hope you never have to use, but when you need it, you're glad to have it there. Children's Healthcare done amazing things in the state of Georgia. Talking about the Florida Gators a little earlier, so we'll remind you here one more time, our Gator Hater Updater, 1,068 days. That's how long since Florida's beaten Georgia. Y'all have a great day. We'll see you tomorrow. Dog Nation Daily, presented by Harris Cherokee Casino.